Welcome to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. I am Doc Mike, host of the podcast. A series of Forrest Gump-like events have brought me to where I am, a small-town country dentist. My experiences in country living, country freedom, country dentistry, and my reaction to pertinent current events may help you live a life of more freedom and less worry. Thank you for choosing the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Now let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode.
Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thanks for joining me here live on Real Liberty Media, or if you're listening to the podcast, thanks for downloading and listening to the podcast. Man, it has been a crazy 2 weeks for me. Oh my Lord, I'm not kidding. It has been incredible. Well, incredibly good and bad, I guess. First of all, let's get through this introduction. This is Right on the Left Coast podcast. It's a podcast about how we do a little homesteading here on the Ravenwood homestead. This is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left. I'm just a guy shining light on the darkness, helping to spread the truth the MSM chooses to ignore, and share some little bit of knowledge that I might have about how you can be a little bit more like food independent. Man, I really think things are going crazy. They are going crazy, and you know, it becomes more and more clear to me every single day that somebody is trying to restrict our ability to have food. And I think we all know who that is. Anyway, if you guys are on a social media site of some kind, could you please post that we're live and we have a chat room and people can come in and join? And I swear, one of these days, soon we are going to do live video chat. Actually, I want to do something right now. I'm just going to pull my shirt up on the video and show you guys. This is so funny. This is why when you have a green screen, you don't wear green. Like, you see what's my, you can just see right through my shirt. It's pretty hilarious. Good. So have fun seeing that. Anyway, post on your social media sites if you are on them that we're live and we have a live chat room, and we'll do the live video chat here soon, really soon. Next week or two, I'm going to start doing it and see how it works. It should be fun, I think. Remember, every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern, you have Behind Woodshed with Hal Anthony. That guy, 2 hours. I don't know, honest to God, I don't know of any other show on commercial radio, podcast, or whatever that puts out as much information as Hal Anthony puts out in 2 hours. I am not kidding. So I hope you kind of join in, listen to his show. You can download it, take it with you. You can listen to it live. I'm telling you, every time I listen to it, it's like I got to listen to that again. I'm just gonna video stream it on Rumble or BitChute. Discord, I'm not really that familiar with, so I'll have to look into that. But anyway, I think it'll be fun to do the live video. Anyway, I hope you all had a great St. Patrick's Day. Here we are the day after, and I hope everybody's recovered from any festivities that they may have enjoyed. But let me kind of get into the last 2 weeks here, man. I'm not kidding. You probably still hear it in my voice a little bit. But 2 weeks ago, so on Monday, 2 weeks ago, so coming up, it's like, so 12 days ago, I just was so exhausted. I got up and got ready to go to work, and I was so flipping exhausted, I actually started to head for the shower, and I just stopped at the recliner and plopped myself down and said, no, I'm not going, man, I'm sick. And I was really sick. I was sick for 2 days, and not, like, it was not like a cold or a sore throat or a stomach bug Or, I mean, I was just exhausted, like literally exhausted. And I hadn't done anything to be exhausted. So, of course, I'm thinking, well, maybe I'm having a heart issue or God knows what. But no, I was just, I was being attacked by some bug of some kind. I don't know what kind, although I'm going to tell you the rest of the story and maybe we'll have you, he hasn't been here for months, so I don't think he did. Somebody said Vinny gave me the cooties. He might have left some around here, but no, I don't think so. Anyway, so Monday and Tuesday, 2 weeks ago, I just stayed home, man. And I'm not kidding. I slept all day Monday. And I slept on and off all day Tuesday, but I literally did not get out of the recliner. And I wanted to do something like play video games or something, but I couldn't. I just was so tired. I just did not do anything but sleep. And then Wednesday that week, of course, every week I have Wednesdays and Fridays off. So Wednesday I had the day off, which was good because it gave me a chance to kind of recover. And then I didn't do the show that Wednesday because I was still recovering and I really didn't want to do anything because I was going to go to work on Thursday. You know, my staff, man, those poor bastards, they have to put up with this, you know, when I do get sick or take a day off for whatever reason. You know, if I'm not there, they can't, there's nothing to keep staff busy for 8 hours a day. So I kind of feel bad when I take days off of work. But, you know, when I'm literally sick, there's no way I'm going to work. And I wish when they were sick, they wouldn't come to work. But, you know, they choose to. And I suppose they have to, you know, to make money. But anyway, so Wednesday I was off. Thursday I went to work. And then I was exhausted Thursday when I got home. I fell directly asleep Thursday. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday I was off. And then Monday, I went to work. Tuesday, I went to work this past week. But Tuesday, I noticed I was getting like this sinus pain, man. Like my teeth hurt so bad, I couldn't put my teeth together. And my cheekbone was sore, kind of like I had a bruise or something on my cheekbone, which I know because I've had a sinus infection before. I was like, oh, I have a sinus infection, you know. Well, it turns out Tuesday, I also had to go to some training after work, which was in a town 45 minutes from my work. So anyway, I called myself in a antibiotic prescription, but I couldn't pick it up because it was so late in the day when I called it in, and then I had to get to this training. And, you know, and I was thinking, I'll just pick it up tomorrow. Tomorrow's Wednesday. It'll be fine. Well, so when I got back from the meeting, which was about 10:15 p.m., I rinsed my sinuses. And I don't know if any of you rinse your sinuses, but I'm telling you, man, it's a benefit. There's a bonus to rinsing your sinuses. And I know people freak out, and I did too. I had sinus surgery about 15 years ago, and I was told that I'd have to rinse my sinuses before and after surgery, and it was a good practice, and blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, I actually really enjoy it. It actually makes you feel good to get your sinuses cleared out, and it keeps them moist and healthy and whatever. Yeah, don't use tap water. Well, it depends, too, on where your water's from, but, oh, my God. I wouldn't use a tap water from a city supply for any amount of money in the world. Yeah, my water's from a well, too, and we've had it tested. It's really nice. I actually, so a good question in the chat was if I have one of those neti pots, they're called, and I don't. I have a squeeze bottle, which I think is about a million times better. It's a very soft squeeze bottle, and you put this special salt in it. It's probably Epsom salt or something. And you mix it up real good. And the squeeze bottle, you know, it has a I don't know how to explain it. It has the part you stick in your nose, and then you just squeeze the bottle, and there's a straw that goes from the nozzle part on the top all the way to the bottom of the bottle so that, you know, when you squeeze it, you get all the liquid out. And I prefer that. I don't know how people use that neti pot, but I suppose it's pretty much the same. But anyway, so I rinsed my sinus on Tuesday night, and then I went to bed because, like I said, I was tired. And, you know, now I had a sinus infection, and I was tired because I had a whole day of work and then went to this training and didn't get back till 10:15, which I'm usually in bed by between 9 and 9:30. So I wake up Wednesday, and I sat up in the... Oh, a guy died down in Florida, I guess, using tap water and rinsing his sinuses. Oh, my God. Well, I don't know what happened there, but, you know, probably some parasite or bacteria or some other toxins that they either put in the water or is in the water. I don't know. But anyway, I sat up in the bed, and I was getting up normal time on Wednesday, and my nose just started bleeding like crazy. And, of course, I'm on blood thinner, so that doesn't help. Anyway, so I got up and made my way to the bathroom and, rinsed my sinuses. Oh, brain-eating parasite. Oh, my God. That sounds horrible. Well, I mean, that'd be a good reason to use, you know, distilled water or something to, you know, or boil the hell out of the water that you're going to use in your rinse. We actually have a distiller, believe it or not, and we distill our own water, and we make, I don't know, a few gallons a day, probably, I don't know, 3 to 5 gallons a day. It's constantly going pretty much because we use distilled water in a lot of things around here. We don't necessarily drink distilled water, but, you know, we use it for different things. Like we have humidifiers we use it in. I use it in my propane furnace because it has a humidity setting. So you're not always just having dry heated air in your home. But anyway, so back to it. So I rinsed my sinuses again Wednesday and got all the junk out of there. There was pus, there was blood. It was freaking gross. But tell you, when you rinse your sinuses, when you have a sinus infection, and you can literally, like, rinse that stuff out, it feels so nice to be able to breathe and relax and get rid of some of the pain that's in your sinuses. Now, today's the first day I've actually felt pretty good. Like yesterday, I was still pretty tired. I slept after work. Wait, yesterday I was off. Thursday when I got home, I slept after work. Friday, I slept on and off. But good Lord, we have had the most beautiful 3 days of weather. So Thursday, Friday, and today. Blue sky, sunshine, 60 degrees. We haven't seen 60 degrees in about 120 days or something like that. They've been keeping track of it on the news. So even though it was like, even though I didn't feel that great, I did get outside to enjoy some of the beautiful sunshine and just soak up some sun and get some vitamin D going. And, you know, it feels good to be outside and be in the sun. And I'll get to more of what I was doing outside in a few minutes. But anyway, so the sinus infection, I think today is the first day I actually feel like I'm going to be back to 100%. And one of the things that's really kind of bugged me about being sick is I have not been able to do my cardio every single day. So, it's been a little sporadic, but I got back on it yesterday and today, so everything's going to be fine. Doesn't feel like I lost any, fitness. If, you know, I got on, I did the same amount of time, I did the same pace, the same heart rate, all that stuff. So I think, I didn't lose any ground that way, let's say. Okay, so yeah, finally, man. And so the last two Wednesdays I didn't do a show. I did do a show last Saturday. I must have been feeling kind of okay, but then I went downhill, you know, shortly after that. But anyway, I'm back at it. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad you guys joined me in chat and listening to the show. And let's get on with it, man. March Madness started this week. I don't know how many of you follow college basketball, but this is just, it's so hilarious every single year if you fill out that bracket. Like 64 teams start in this tournament, right? And you try and pick the winners, you know, who's going to be in the final, you know, you pick the whole bracket, all 64 teams, winner and loser, all the way through to the end. And, oh, my God, I think my bracket was busted the first day. And by that, I mean, like, if you make some choices that, you know, if you pick a team on the first day, like a number one team, and they get beat by a number 16, which that actually happened to me. Yeah, my bracket, one whole side of my bracket is shot. But I did learn something good about this is, you know, there's more and more great basketball players coming out of everywhere. And there's not enough room for them on all the number one teams in the country. So what are they doing? They're going to all these other schools, or they're going to schools where they want to actually learn something while they're playing basketball. And so you're getting these awesome basketball players at little tiny schools that normally wouldn't compete in a big tournament, the NCAA tournament, and here they are taking down number ones. And like old number ones, you know, schools have been, you know, number one competing schools for decades, maybe even a century, you could say. Well, the NCAA tournament hasn't been around that long, but my point is, you know, you're going to have to, if you play the college basketball thing, bracket, you're going to have to be paying a lot more attention because, like, in the future, you know, I think Duke went down today. You know, for those of you who know this, you know, Duke went down. So the team that I picked Purdue, who was a, oh, I don't know, might be a Big Ten team. I don't really know them, but I watched them play a few times, and they have this, I don't know, 7-foot center, and, you know, they looked pretty good. And they won, let's see, they won 29 and lost 5 games during the regular season. And I was like, well, they've made it in the – so there's 4 divisions in the NCAA tournament, you know, east, west, north, south, whatever you want to call it. And they were number one in one of those quadrants, and the number 16 team beat them. And I can't even tell you who that team was. Might have been Creighton. I don't know. Some, you know, some team that shouldn't have but did beat them. And, yeah, so that wiped out because I picked Purdue to go to the final and not win the final. But guess who I think I did pick? I think I picked Duke or Kansas, and I think they both lost. Not in the first round, but in the second round. So, yeah, so my fun is over for the NCAA tournament. But, you know, there's still like 3 weeks of games, so I'll be paying attention because it's one of the things I do. Rochelle and I actually do it. She actually is the one who sent me the bracket invitation this year. It's like, hey, we got to make our picks, you know. You know, I got to tell you, I'm not kidding. And for those of you who have met Rochelle, you know, I'm like the luckiest guy in the world. Because she, like, we just do fun stuff, you know. We just, like, always want to have a good time, you know. Whatever it is we're doing, we try and make the best of it. Even the bad times, man, we just try and roll with it, get through whatever bad times there are, and, you know, get back on and start going again. So, you know, she likes football, which is really a blessing because I've watched football all my life. She's not that crazy about NASCAR, but she does watch NASCAR occasionally. And, you know, we have a little friendly competition going on there. And, you know, like I said, NFL and NCAA basketball. And we watch baseball because we like Milwaukee teams, like, you know, or Wisconsin teams. So Green Bay, the Wisconsin Badgers, the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Milwaukee Brewers, which is the baseball team. But what I was kind of getting at is the things we were doing around the homestead today, like we had to get some stuff done. I mean, if you have this beautiful weather, you got to be outside and be enjoying it and do something about it, you know? Like, get out and be in the sun and soak it up. And it was so nice not to have a coat on. Just put a, I just had my bib overalls and a t-shirt. And, you know, in the shade, it was a little cool. But, you know, you didn't have to sit in the shade. We were out in the sun. We had to move this one lilac bush because it was bugging her. She didn't like where it was. And it was sprouting up all kinds of suckers. And she was like, yeah, we got to take this out of here. So what that actually means is we had to take down some fence because where this lilac bush was, well, I couldn't get the tractor to it without taking down the fence. And if you think that I'm digging up an old lilac bush by hand, no, I am not. Matter of fact, anything I can do with, you know, gasoline power, diesel power, piston power, hydraulic power, you name it. You know, anything I can do with some kind of power, that's what I'm going to be using, is some kind of powered tool to do the back-breaking work. So we had to take down a couple sections of fence, and I took my tractor in there, used the backhoe, and pulled that plant and all its little suckers out. And then, of course, we had to put the fence back up because, you know, that's the yard we let the dogs run freely in. And anyway, so we had a really good time outside doing that, you know. And, of course, it makes her feel good to accomplish that one little thing that she wants to have done. It's important. So we did it. And, I have some great updates to tell you guys about this week. And I think I'm going to switch the show up so I do the Homestead show on Saturdays and the current events kind of topical show on Wednesdays. I think that would be a good way to do it. But, you know, it's that time of year. It's spring. Like, we're 1 week away from spring. So the weather's going to get better. The days are getting, you know, we're getting more daylight, you know, throughout each day we get a little more daylight. Which is awesome because, you know, you have more time to do stuff with light, which is great. And with these last 3 days, I got to really test out the All-American Sun Oven. And I got to tell you, I'm really kind of impressed. I'm going to scroll down in my notes here. I want to make sure I don't miss anything. So I said I tested out the temps on the All-American Sun Oven on a mostly cloudy day. So this had to have been probably Wednesday, the day I was off and not feeling so hot. It wasn't a thick cloudy day, but it was cloudy enough that you really had to look for your shadow. Like, you couldn't really see your shadow. I mean, you could, but you really had to look for it, you know? And I was like, well, let's see what this sun oven does on a day like this. Because I want to know before I try to cook something how long it's going to take me to cook something, right? And how efficient it's going to be, if it's going to be efficient at all. Well, that sun oven got to about 200 degrees on a cloudy, slightly breezy day. Now, you know, there's a built-in device that helps you line up this sun oven so it is like perfectly aligned with the sun. And I'm just going to tell you, like right now, here in Oregon on Western 45th. The adjustment on the sun oven is maxed out just to get the sun, the little sun dot, in the right spot. So that means that this is like the lowest, basically, angle the sun is going to be in the sky. You know, we're kind of at the end of winter, so during the winter the sun is lowest in the sky, and you know, so you don't have good angle of attack. But anyway, just thinking that, okay, even in March, on a cloudy day, overcast day, that oven got up to 200 degrees. It's probably a lot like your car sitting in the sun, I guess, but I don't think my car gets to 200 degrees in this, you know, in temperatures this time of year. But I was pretty impressed. But 200 degrees is like smoking stuff. You know, it's not really, I mean, you could cook some stuff at 200 degrees, but it's going to take a while, right? You would want to have stuff in there that is, you're reheating, I think. Like if you already had a meal cooked and you just wanted to warm it up, that'd be perfect. Or if you had some foods that, you know, weren't going to go through any bacterial growth phase while you're waiting for it to get cooked. Because it's going to take a while, and think about that. So let's say in the winter time, it's still winter time. So in the winter time, if you were going to cook with this oven, you would have to be ready the minute the sun comes up, get that oven pointed directly in the right, you know, perfect angle, you know, and have your food in there ready to go, and then get it done, because, you know, you only have, what, 6-7 hours of light in the winter time, and it's going to take all 6 or 7 of those hours to heat up your food. Now, on the other hand, yesterday, beautiful blue sky, sunny day, right? I didn't get the oven out until about 10:30 or 11 o'clock. So the sun was up a little higher than, you know, where it starts out, of course, when it comes over the horizon, which it's really hard to kind of start picking up the sun when it first comes up. But, you know, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, you can start getting the sun into your sun oven. Yeah, exactly. But that thing got up to 300 degrees in no time, like in 20 or 30 minutes, it was up to 300 degrees. And if you go out every half an hour and repoint it at the sun, you can get a full sweep of sunshine right in your sun oven. Now, there's a couple things I noticed. Like, they recommend that you use pans, containers with lids. And I have to say 100%. You want to use a pan with a lid on it. And you don't really want a shiny one either. You want a dark one, like black enamel. And the reason is, so yesterday I cooked a blueberry swirl coffee cake in the sun oven. And it was delicious, and it cooked almost perfectly. And I left it in there an hour. Now, one nice thing about these sun ovens is you're not going to burn anything, because the door on it is glass, and when you close it, it seals against a seal, and no moisture is going to burn off. It's all going to be contained inside your sun oven. But here's the problem. So, of course, the blueberry swirl coffee cake did not have a lid on the container I baked it in, and the moisture kind of fogged up and collected on the door, right? Well, you have these giant reflectors trying to focus the energy inside your oven, and now your glass door is all fogged up like there's condensation on it. Yeah, the temperature starts dropping. So that's one thing I noticed right away is, okay, you really have to use, You really have to use containers with lids on them, because that's when you're going to get the best results. You're going to continue to heat your oven and not fog up your window. And trust me, because today I put corned beef and cabbage in there to rewarm it. And today it was kind of the same. Now, yesterday some high clouds came in about 4 o'clock and the oven dropped to about 250, 240. From 300. So it was still hot, you know, but just not like cooking temperature, I would say. Lid. Yeah. Lids. Thank you. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, so today I put the corned beef and cabbage in there from yesterday. We always do St. Patrick's Day, a little corned beef and cabbage and potatoes. And I put it in there to rewarm it, you know, and it was 300 degrees. It was 320 at one point. And, yeah, that stayed nice and warm, but I didn't put a lid on it like an idiot. And sure enough, I'd go out and check every half hour. I mean, we weren't in any hurry to eat, so we just left it in there to get nice and hot. And, fogged up the glass door again and cut down the temperature by about, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 degrees. It was still plenty hot, which was nice. You know, just pulled it out and had a little couple bites and then went back to work. But, so the All-American Sun Oven is working great, and I'm just looking forward to it. And I think Rochelle really kind of started figuring out, hey, this is going to be great, even especially in the summertime when you don't want to bake in your oven, but you want to have those meals that you would normally bake. You know, you can just do it outside, and the angle of the sun is much higher. You're going to get much better penetration. You're going to be much hotter oven. And a lot more time of day for cooking, too. So if you wanted to cook, hell, they've done 11-pound turkeys in these little ovens before. And they did them in a brown-in bag, you know, where they close it up in a bag and cooked it in there. Yeah, I know. I'm probably going to buy a set of enamel pots that stack. And they actually have them at the All-American Sun Oven site, but I have a feeling I could get them cheaper somewhere else. Not that I'm saying don't buy from them. I think they're a great company. So far, I'm 100% satisfied with the Sun Oven. I can see the potential. The good potential cooking outside in the summertime. You know, I grill a lot, you know, all year long, and summertime is a good time for grilling. But I mean, when you want to put those meals together, you know, if you want to have a meatloaf or you want to have a casserole or you want to have whatever, but you don't want to do it in your oven because you don't want to heat up your house, this is a perfect solution. Now in the wintertime, I don't know, we're going to have to test some more and see, you know, what kind of foods you could likely put together and cook in that in the winter time, because you have limited daylight, low sun angle, and, you know, probably just not going to get that hot. So we'll see. But I tell you, if you put a lid on, you know, your containers and not fog up your glass, you're going to build up heat better for a longer period of time. So anyway, but I mean, it's a learning curve, you know. It even tells you to use containers with lids, right? But like an idiot, you know, I'm just going to go test it my own way and ignore the tips that they give you. And so at least I know now, you know, if you want the most efficient cooking, you're going to use lids. Let's see what else I had to say about that. One other adjustment that I have to get used to is this. This is kind of funny, too. You don't think of it as an oven, which is really kind of crazy. So you open the door, which is not hot. It's warm, but it's not hot, and it has a little area for you to grab where you're not grabbing something hot. And you just pop this thing open, and you reach in like, you know, you're going to grab something, whatever. And it's hot. It's like 300 freaking degrees. And the dish that you put your food in is hot. Yeah, it's hot. It's a freaking oven. So you have to use, you know, gloves or your heat, hot pads or whatever. So anyway, overall, I'm really ecstatic with the All-American Sun oven. You know, no power in the summertime, no problem. You're going to be cooking. And that's a thing, too. We had that power outage on the day. It was like 106, and we didn't have any water, and we didn't have any power for a day. I think they came and fixed us up pretty quickly, but it sucks not to have power. But you could be cooking food in your All-American Sun oven. It was a great deal. Okay, here's the next thing, man. I am so happy to get to report this. And that is the fermenting. Oh, my God. This really kind of surprised me how good my first ferment turned out. So I cracked open the carrots. What's today? Saturday. So probably Wednesday, Thursday. I cracked open the carrots and tasted one, and I was so shocked, man. Number one, they're like crunchy. It's not like a canned carrot, you know, where it gets all, you know, soft. It's like crunchy. And then the flavor. Okay, so remember, let's bring up, there is a site, man. You really got to see this site. It's kind of funny. It's called killerpickles.com. This person has a ton of fermenting recipes on her site. Yeah, let me put it back up there. Attack of the Killer Pickles. Sarah's Kitchen presents Attack of the Killer Pickles. She has a bunch of recipes there, but the recipe I used came from that Epoch Times article about, you know, fermenting at home. Maybe I can post it again, but I can just tell you what went in the carrots. So I sliced one jalapeno in half, mainly for decoration, to, you know, for the jar, for the, you know, aesthetic presentation, really. I mean, I did want the jalapenos, but mainly it was just to make it look nice, kind of look like the way it did on the article. I wonder if I could find that real quick. No, of course I can't find it real quick. But let's just try. Hang with me here a minute. Come on, baby. Oh, yeah, here it is. Man, that was pretty lucky. Oh, look at that picture. I'm telling you, now this picture looks so much different to me. It's making my mouth water just looking at it. I'm going to explain to you what this ferment tasted like, but let's go down here and see what I was talking about. Okay, this is what I did. I did this very display right here. So I had one jalapeno cut in half. I cut the carrots into sticks, you know, just tall enough to fit in the jar, and about a quarter inch thick. It really doesn't matter. One thing about fermenting I think that you'll learn is, you know, people will tell you to cut things in a certain whatever size. It really doesn't matter. Just do it. Just do it. Anyway, so that was garlic, jalapeno, thyme, carrots, and let's see, black peppercorns, and then salt water. That's all that's in this. So, you know, and I watched it. Like, the first few days, I had to, you know, you have to crack the lid to let it burp because so much pressure is building up inside these jars. And I'm going to grab the jar of the next thing I have. I want to show you. I'll just hold it up to the camera. It's actually kind of pretty. But I, no kidding, this tasted so good, and I put it out for everybody to taste, and everybody loved it. Everybody enjoyed the flavor. It's kind of weird. It's a little bit of a tart, just slightly tart flavor, like a little bit sour, a little bit salty. And, of course, you get the thyme and the black pepper and the garlic, you know, nice strong garlic. Not too strong. Like, you could smell the garlic more than taste it, I think. And Hayden, the oldest grandson, he actually said when he tasted the carrot, he goes, "Oh, I can taste the jalapeno," which really surprised me because I did not taste the jalapeno until I ate the jalapeno, and then I could taste it. But oh my gosh, you guys, now I'm ready, man. Tomorrow it's on. I'm going to do more jalapenos and carrots and onion. I think this is a great mix right here. Jalapenos, onions, and carrots. It's so good. And it's so good for you. So let me remind you why you should ferment food, okay? Number one is you extend the life of that food. So when you ferment food, you're going to be able to keep it for months in the refrigerator. So, so if you just had the carrot sitting out on the table or, you know, in the refrigerator, they're going to get wilted and soft. And, you know, if you don't use them up, you know, you're going to lose them. This is a great way to preserve them. And you add benefit to the vegetable, to the food. When you ferment it, you make those probiotics, which is good for your gut. And, so you not only extend the life of the vegetable, but you extend the nutritional value of the food, which is awesome. And the third thing is, it tastes delicious. I'm not kidding how shocked I was at how good it tasted. Now, when I smelled it as it was fermenting, I was like, oh, that smells good. I'm not a guy who is offended by smells like that. Like, some people think sauerkraut stinks, right? Or some people will say Brussels sprouts smell like farts or something. Yeah, okay, maybe that's true. I don't know. I smell food, and it smells like food. I'm going to step away for just a minute because I want to show you the jar that I put together yesterday, and just might as well, you can see it live here in just a sec. All right, I held it up to the camera before I sat down here. So let's see. Let me hold it up again. Maybe you can see it. Now this is, it's called Gardeniera. And this is cauliflower, carrot, celery, some red pearl onions, garlic, bay leaves, black peppercorns. Man, I cannot wait until this thing is done. Oh, I think the green screen was screwing with the celery a little bit. That's okay, though. You'll get it. You'll see. Anyway, yeah, I'm turned on now to the whole fermenting thing, so I have to be careful because you don't want to ferment so much stuff that you don't have room to keep it. Although, then you could just eat it, I guess. But, God dang it, man. Here I am, 65 years old. And just finding out about fermenting foods. And it kind of bums me out because it's so damn good. This is the kind of snack that I would prefer to go to when I want to have a snack. Lots of vinegar someday. I don't know. Oh, kimchi. I know there's a recipe for kimchi, a couple recipes for kimchi. Yeah, I'm dying for it, Donna. I'm not kidding. I really want to try that one, too. But yeah, I'm psyched, very psyched about it. So let me see, did I explain what I tasted? Oh yeah, I said I explained the taste. There's a very slight tartness, a pleasant one, some saltiness, and of course the garlic, carrot, and jalapeno flavors. You know, it's just such a fantastic way to preserve some food and have a snack that's good for you. So I really recommend, especially we're coming up on the time, man. All of these gardens are going to start producing soon. Your local, farmer's market or roadside produce stand or your neighbors are going to have this food available. You might as well, put it to some good use and have some food available when maybe some food's not going to be available. All right, we did the sun oven. Let me make sure I didn't miss any notes above. But yeah, I'm just going to encourage you. It's so simple. I mean, literally, if you just put carrots, salt water, and garlic in a jar and fermented, I bet you would think it's delicious. I'm not kidding. Like, you could hardly go wrong. You do want to keep the vegetables under the liquid, though. That's one very important thing. Oh, and by the way, so I'm going to hold this jar back up just a little bit. You see this little thing on the top? So this is, they call this a pickle pipe. It's a fermenting top. So there's pressure building up in this, but it just gets escaped out. So I don't have to actually burp that one every day like I had to my first set. So the first set I did, the carrots, I had to burp it every day for about a week, and then I got these pickle pipes, they're called, or fermenting tops, and now it's just all automatic. So this is one day I've had this going, and I have it in a cabinet on the other side of the studio, and I opened the door just to look at it the other day, and I saw gas bubbles come out of it. No, I mean, that was today. Like literally one day after I started fermenting. Now that's going to take about a month. So that's kind of exciting. So that'll be ready about on 4/20, which will be perfect. So I can eat like half the jar and it'll be good for me. You know, 4/20. All right, let's move along. Man, I'm kind of surprised that I've made it this long because I really kind of didn't think I was going to make it a whole hour, but we're going to make it a whole hour. I want to get to a couple stories. One thing, we did plant an Asian pear today too. That was something else we did. And I also wanted to kind of give you an update on the blueberries that we picked up for damn near nothing. I mean, $5 for these big mature blueberry bushes, and they look like they're doing awesome. So I'm really kind of, yeah. Yep. I lost my train of thought, damn it. Oh, Asian pears. The blueberries. No, the blueberries look like they are doing awesome. Like it had to have been really kind of God's intervention in some way that we found these blueberries when we did, that we went and got them and put them in the ground when we did, and that the weather absolutely 100% cooperated perfectly with these berries going in the ground. So that's kind of awesome that I think they're going to be fantastic. And remember, we're not going to harvest this year. They say the first year when you transplant, you pick all the flowers off and let all that growth go into the roots. We have some other blueberries that we've had in the ground for years that we will pick those berries this year. Not these berries. Oh my God, you guys, I'm not kidding. My mouth is watering so much from thinking about this, the fermented carrots, I really want to just go grab them and eat them. So as soon as I'm done, I can tell you 100% that's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to go grab those carrots and eat them. Okay, but I wanted to tell you about this. This was so a couple things that we're going to talk about, which is most important. Let's do the chicken thing first. So I read this interesting article. I'm going to put it up on the screen. It's from the Children's Health Defense.org. You can see it's from the Defender. And it says, why are chickens so sick? Now, the reason I thought I'd bring this up, a couple reasons. One is, so I bought a 56 egg, completely automatic incubator, because I want it to handle the egg turning, the temperature, and the humidity, because I want us to have success hatching chicks and growing meat. Now, something that I had always wondered about since there's been this big hullabaloo about avian flu and chicken flocks, and especially backyard chicken flocks, and this is something that has really bothered me too. So I'm just going to put this out there for those people who are doing backyard birding or who want to start growing their own food, raising their own chickens, getting their own eggs. And probably if you've listened to me even a few times, you know that I think the last place you need help from is any officials, okay? The reason I'm saying this is because, let's say, for example, I go down in the chicken coop tomorrow morning and there's a dead chicken. You think I should get on the phone to the local, you know, Oregon State University Extension Service and go, hey, I have a chicken that died here. Could you guys come and figure out why it died? Like, I just want to tell you, this is probably the worst possible idea ever. Don't call officials into your little backyard farm or your backyard garden. In fact, probably the less people know, the better in general. Because, listen to how stupid this is. Even though, like, this makes absolutely zero sense. Like, zero sense that you have avian flu infect a flock of chickens and some official finds out, they're going to come and wipe out your entire flock of chickens. Whether they're sick or not, they're going to kill every single chicken. Why does that not make sense? I'm going to tell you why. Because chickens can survive the avian flu. Birds can survive the avian flu. It isn't 100% fatal. So why do we go in, why do they go in and cull a million birds of a flock? Or your 30 birds? So you decide, man, I sure hope my chicken didn't have avian flu. I better call up the local, you know, whomever, and have them come check out my chicken. Yeah, and they're going to check out your chicken, all right. And they're going to test it and see if it's got avian flu. And, I mean, with the record of the government's test for flus, I think you should be kind of suspicious of their test. And then they're going to take every chicken you have and kill it. Now, it seems to me, and believe it or not, people have actually suggested keeping the surviving birds and breeding them to make a breed of chickens that's resistant to avian flu. That makes perfect sense, right? It makes perfect sense. That's how evolution works, if you believe in evolution. Yeah, something comes along and causes a problem with a population of animals, and it starts killing them off. And there's a few of those animals, man, that'll survive. Okay, here's a great example. Let's say bacteria. Let's take it down to the base level. Bacteria, man. So, you know, you have an infection, you treat it with penicillin, and you wipe out the infection. But there's going to be a couple little bacteria that through the, you know, generations that they, you know, like the 7-day course of antibiotics you were on, bacteria double every, I don't know, 6 hours. So in, you know, 7 days, there's like, 28 segments of 6 hours. So you've had 28 generations of bacteria exposed to your penicillin, and there's going to be a couple. There's going to be a few tiny little bacteria that are like, hey, we survived that bout with the penicillin, man. We're stronger now. We're going to live on. And we're going to reproduce more bacteria so that the next time we create an infection, that penicillin's not going to hurt us. I hope you're enjoying my dramatization of bacteria life. Yeah, but anyway, so the same thing with animals in the world. You know, something comes along, some disease, some flu, some parasite comes along and starts wiping them out, but there's a few of those animals that survive, and they go on and reproduce, and then their offspring have a tiny bit more resistance to whatever it was that was causing the issue. And after a couple generations, maybe you have a strong enough immune system to that particular insult that you survive it. It's no longer a thing. And that's exactly what avian flu, what we could be doing with avian flu. But no, we're not. I'm going to tell you, because I can see that the clock is ticking here. We're getting short on time. I was watching Doug and Stacy. If you don't know Doug and Stacy, they're homesteaders off the grid with Doug and Stacy. I would say if you are starting off homesteading, go binge watch everything you can watch on Doug and Stacy. But this in particular kind of blew me away. They did a little segment on elderberries. There's a lot to learn about elderberries. Elderberry is a fantastic medicine for the human race in general. But guess what else? Elderberries, if you grow them, if you have backyard birds, if you have a chicken flock, if you're raising your own chickens to have your own eggs, or raising your own chickens to have, you know, your own meat, which I think is a great idea, if you grow elderberries on your property and you make them safe during the time when they're vulnerable, so every year you cut them down, and then they're gonna repopulate. You know, it's like a weed. You cut it down, it's gonna bring up more shoots and more bushes and more elderberries. Elderberries actually prevent chickens from getting avian flu. How about that? It's one of the things that has been proven to prevent chickens from getting avian flu. Well, you probably won't hear that from your government or your officials, who are, of course, going to tell you exactly what they're going to do with your chickens when one shows up sick. So don't be telling anybody if you have a dead bird. Don't invite officials. Listen. Keep it in the community. Talk to other people who have done this whole thing. and you'll be better off. Take their advice, not government officials. Trust me on this one. Thanks for joining me tonight. I'll see you guys Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.